You're listening to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from Misadventures of an Adoptive Dad.
Hello, and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. It's a bit of a special podcast this week, in recognition of the fact it's LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week, from the 6th to the 12th of March. So I've sent Al off on his holidays, and locked him out, so he can't get back in, actually. I've not sent him on his holidays, but I think he's outside somewhere with a turnip and an axe, whilst I've taken over the studio. And Al and I agreed that I would interview some of my LGBT parent community, and we focused on adoption with a lesbian mother and a gay dad. So those interviews are coming up. But LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week has been running for 7 or 8 years now, and as ever, it is facilitated by New Family Social, the LGBT parenting charity. They do some fantastic work all across the UK, and they really are an amazing charity. So if you want to find out more about New Family Social, then visit newfamilysocial.org.uk. For LGBT Adoption Fostering Week, it's like I say, it's been going around, I think it's nearly 8 years now. But each spring, agencies across the UK hold events specifically for lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender prospective parents and families as well. You can find out more about LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week on the website specifically for the event, and that's lgbtadoptfosterweek.org.uk. That's lgbtadoptfosterweek.org.uk. So coming up, we've got two interviews, one with Ruth, who's a lesbian mum of three children, and one with Calvin, a gay dad of two. I hope you enjoy them, and Al and I will be back next week, so do not fear, the banter will return. But I hope you enjoy the interviews, and whether you're LGBT or not, I hope you have a great week. Cheers.
Hi Calvin, how are you?
I'm good, thanks Scott, thank you.
Good, welcome, and thank you for agreeing to talk to me tonight. So can you just tell us a bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. So there's four of us, James and I, and our two little boys. They're now 4 and 6. They've been with us for 3 years, so we've ticked over a number of kind of significant milestones. So we've had that magical moment with both of them where they've been with us longer than they've been anywhere else. It's just been really good.
Yeah, that's it's true that, isn't it? Because you do feel like they get to a certain point where they've been with you longer than anywhere else, and it becomes quite an important milestone. I don't know if it's as an important milestone for them as it is for us as parents. I don't know.
Yeah. So we made, obviously it happened with our youngest first, because that's how time works. And when we tried to involve them in our kind of celebration of this, because we felt it certainly as a couple that it was a big thing, it became quite apparent that they didn't kind of understand that. And it caused a little bit of confusion.
Yeah.
So we didn't do it the second time around for the eldest. We realised that essentially was a thing that my partner and I were celebrating rather than involve them in at that stage.
Oh,
but we've celebrated all the other kind of milestones, the celebration, the anniversary, the adoption order. They've got the little celebration certificates up on their walls, so they know that date, and we celebrate that each year.
Yeah. So three years ago, so that would be 2014. Is that right? So when did you start thinking about starting a family?
My partner was definitely the driver for it. He'd been thinking about it a lot longer than I had. And the story I always tell, which isn't quite true, but it has enough of a grain of truth in it, is that we decided to start. I became aware that we were going to adopt when he announced it at dinner with our friends.
Fair enough.
We'd always kind of, we knew that we wanted a family at some point, but that defined the starting moment for kind of doing it. So that was back in the summer of 2012, and then we moved pretty rapidly and got ourselves onto a prep course before the end of the year. And went through the kind of the home study with RVA and social worker, and went to approval in the summer of 13 and met them the following year. So right, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. And so in terms of the process, did you was it what you expected?
I'm not entirely sure we knew what we were expecting, to be honest. Okay. I mean, we spoke to other adopters through the New Family Social kind of site and met up with a few of those. So I got some kind of glimmer of insight, but so we knew that we were going to have social worker visits. We knew that there were going to be questions that were going to range from the banal to the intrusive. But we just had to trust that it was a process that was going to work and that they were asking things for the right sort of reasons. And yeah, so we went through it. I mean, we made things a little bit harder for ourselves by trying to buy a house at the same time. So there was a lot of kind of competing pressures. But the it always felt like we were working towards the same goal, which was nice. Yeah. We never felt in opposition with social workers, and and it was really LGBT inclusive as well, which was important for us as well.
Yeah, because it's interesting, I'm still surprised to hear that some aren't quite as kind of keen to still, and 10, 11 years on after the law changed, to not be as inclusive as perhaps we'd like. So it's nice when you hear positive stories like that. Well, for me it is anyway. And so was adoption your first choice? It sounds like it was.
We've been trying naturally, but it just wasn't working.
Oh, you just sound like my other half. He says it all the time, actually. Yeah.
It was the first choice for us. We were, any other route, and we felt that it was important to do something, knowing things that we knew about the number of kids in care as well, and we felt we had a home to offer. And if we could be realistic about the sort of children that we could parent, then we felt we had something that, and we'd like to help.
Yeah,
it sounds very virtuous, but in reality we wanted a family. That's a key driver for us.
Yeah, and do you feel that you were kind of prepared enough for the children that you've ended up parenting, or in terms of training and all the sort of stuff that perhaps is in some agencies but not in others? Do you feel that you got enough?
I think we did, and I think part of that was helped by we had quite a lot of conversations with our social worker about, the full spectrum of needs that's out there in looked after children, and tried to be very, honest with ourselves about what we could and couldn't achieve. And I think that made the selection process and looking for a child, the mapping process, quite hard. But I think it's turned out all right. I think we've our kids are wonderful.
It made that journey
I think a little bit tougher, because we were having to be quite strict with ourselves about what was realistic given our kind of skill set and circumstances. And we always felt supported in that decision as well. We never felt pressured to try and take a child whose needs we perhaps couldn't meet or would struggle to meet.
So you mentioned there about New Family Social, and what about your friends and family? How did they take to you going through this process quite well? Was there any kind of moments? As I'm sure.
No, they were genuinely overjoyed for us. Yeah. It was a real happy moment. We thought they were going to be cool about it anyway. The reaction was very positive, very supportive. We often have to compete with my father for being, our son's greatest advocate. I mean, it's been a really, once they've wrapped their head around what kind of was involved, I think there was a lot of naive enthusiasm initially, and then there's kind of slightly more measured, this is what it's going to be like. And then as soon as they thought a little bit more about it, it's been nothing but kind of unconditional support. So we've been really lucky.
Yeah. So what about your friends? How, you know, and kind of colleagues and things like that? Were they, you know, were they all right with it?
Absolutely. I mean, I found out at this dinner with friends that we were going to start this process, and everybody was overjoyed. It was absolutely lovely. And we had we had friends write very supportive statements as part of the as part of the approval process as well, and were kind of interviewed as well, and have been really, really supportive of not only going through the process to be approved to adopt, but also every day since that, especially in the first few days and weeks and months of the placement, when we were, you know, kind of crisis management from day to day. Really supportive in kind of either, you know, simultaneously reaching out to us whilst giving us our space to kind of fumble through this. We felt thoroughly supported by everybody, so we're quite happy with that. It'd just be nice if they were a bit closer.
It does make a huge difference as well, because I think that, I don't know about you, but, you know, certainly when we adopted, we were kind of scared that we weren't doing things right. So to have that kind of support on hand is really important, because I think you doubt yourself as a parent anyway, but I think when you're getting your head around being a same-sex couple in parenting as well, when it's all still quite new, it's you just need that, don't you?
Yeah, we found it. Most of our kind of support network was heterosexual couples with children.
Yeah.
So we were kind of reaching out for them for just kind of, oh my God, how do you know, this situation has arisen? What the heck? Mm. And they were incredibly supportive. And we met the new family social thing was really good for kind of showing how that could work in the same-sex couple environment as well.
Yeah.
And but to be honest, I mean, the single most useful thing that New Family did for us was show us in the run-up to approval and matching and placement that there was a, you know, that the endpoint was achievable. Because obviously the process goes on for a long time, and you do occasionally have doubts, and knowing that it happens, and that you're seeing these kind of happy families in front of you was a real light, yeah.
It's funny because I'm now feeling old because New Family Social had only just started when I went through. After our children were adopted, so I remember it from the very early days. But definitely, you know, some support like that would have been fantastic when we went through it, because we did bumble our way through. We didn't have a clue what to expect at any stage, you know, even up to approval. And you know, our assessment took 14 months. Because we were the first one to do it through the agency that we used, and we just thought that was normal. We didn't, you know, I mean, it is for some actually that length of time, but I mean, I think that's a key part of New Family Social and what you can kind of get from them as well. You know, I think it's really important that we've got kind of an agency like that to be able to kind of, you know, just check in with and make sure that actually we're, you know, we are doing it right, or that other people are doing it right, kind of thing.
Yeah, and just knowing that somebody else has kind of felt, you know, something akin to the kind of the emotions and you know, the scenarios that you're kind of dealing with was pretty invaluable to us. Just even things like just occasionally just glancing through the forums and just going, oh yeah, I see our family in that scenario that's being described it is reassuring.
Yeah. So, and in terms of your children, I mean, you know, they're still reasonably young. do they kind of see a difference in, you know, from their friends, or, you know, from, I don't know whether they're at school or whether you home educate them, certainly your oldest one anyway, but do they see a difference to having two dads, to a mum and a dad, or?
If they do, they've not articulated it to us. We do a lot of conversations with them around, you know, the different types of families that there are. Our eldest who's at school, you know, just takes it all in his stride at the moment. We haven't had any instances where he's had that, you know, difference, as it were, pointed out to him, and then and then, you know, had to kind of process that. So we've been, we've been quite lucky. There's another same-sex couple at the school as well. So a lesbian couple at the school as well.
Yeah.
So it's already, there's been a certain amount of normalisation going on in the school environment.
Yeah.
Because of that already as well.
Yeah.
The nursery that they went to as well was, it was fine, and all the other kids just rolled with the punches, and to the point now where one of us is dad and one of us is daddy, and if the nursery worker says, oh, yeah, my youngest child's name is your dad here, and it's the other one, some of the other children will leap in and correct them.
That's brilliant. I love that. I do love that. That's really good. There's something in the kind of innocence of younger children as well, isn't there? You know, because I think that, you know, I read a lot of kind of the comments about, you know, there's things that you learn from your own parents or from outside influences, and I guess as you get older, you tend to listen to them more. So it's I know that definitely my experience is that, you know, my children go through high school, they didn't have a major amount of issues with having gay dads, but it did come up now and again, but it was very swiftly dealt with, and I think they had the confidence to deal with it as well, because there was, you know, it was an innocence thing in some ways, because that's their life, you know, that is what it is, and, you know, if anybody disrespected that, they deal with it, kind of thing. But if they couldn't, then, you know, it was our turn to kind of rock up and advocate for, to make sure that, you know, there was whatever needed to happen sort of thing. So you know, it's nice to hear that in younger children, that they've still got that kind of that confidence to be able to, you know, point something, and especially if their schoolmates are doing the same. I think that's
it's really sweet. It happens a lot in the nursery environment. And when we're out and about, if if I'm taking them out and we're shopping or something, and the cashier says, oh, are you out with daddy? You know, our children get very confused. They just go, no, it's dad. Daddy's at work. Or something like that.
Oh, bless. So, and in terms of, do you think there's a difference between the kind of support that we as parents should get or do get, being LGBT to, you know, maybe a straight couple? Do you think that's something that you've experienced, or do you think there should be some specific support for us as LGBT parents from a local authority's perspective? I'm thinking.
Oh, that's a really good question. I genuinely don't know, to be honest. Mm. The only thing that I kind of worry about or think or dwell on in terms of the LGBT context is is support for having those sort of conversations with schools and things when incidents of, you know, of homophobia and things like that creeps up. And advocating for kind of more inclusive ideas of what a family is within the school environment as well, so that it becomes normalised for everybody, and our little nips aren't constantly feeling like the ones that are different.
Yeah.
So maybe something about that, but I genuinely don't know, to be honest. I mean, we've maybe that's just naivety on my part.
Yeah. No, someone actually pointed that question out to me the other day and said, you know, do you feel that there's more support or there should be more support? And I guess it's like everything, isn't it? You know, you've got the likes of New Family Social, but you know, if you were any adoptive parent can access any of the kind of adoption support agencies or voluntary agencies or, you know, whoever. But it's quite, I don't know. Do we want to be kind of put in this little pigeonhole of they need additional support because they're LGBT? I'm not convinced on that one, if you like. And I think that actually a lot of it is universal in terms of support, really. But like you say, there are kind of specific scenarios that we might need help, and we probably no disrespect to any social worker listening, but we might actually know more about how to deal with that than they would as well. So I guess it's still a learning process, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, although there's a fair number of same-sex couples adopting. It's certainly not, you know, it's not the majority under any stretch, or even it's just a large proportion, but significant. But yeah, I mean, my feeling around support and everything like that is that the needs of the child has to be the driver there, and it's what they need that should determine the support, not necessarily the makeup of the couple, unless there's other kind of support drivers in there, disability, for instance, that would attract kind of additional external support. It's not obvious what the LGBT angle would be there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
Bless you. It's just an interesting kind of view, I guess. So in terms of the LGBT community, and I don't know if you've got any involvement with them, but do you find that they're quite accepting of the fact that you're parents, or are you not really involved in that kind of community? Or
I actually co-chair our LGBT network at work.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a number of same-sex couples who are parents as well. So actually it's a. It's something that it gets talked about a surprising amount, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I've never felt any opposition. To being a parent from the LGBT community, which is rather lovely. In fact, a lot of my virtually all of our friends have been very, very supportive, and in fact, some couples are even, they kind of reach out periodically and say, well, we're thinking about it. Can you kind of let us know what you did as well? So it looks, I think it's a positive story.
Yeah. I get that as well. Actually, it's quite nice when you get those kind of inquiries as well, but it's very individual, isn't it? Your journey will probably have been very different to theirs, and, and I think that as time goes on, and the longer that we have as a community been parents, I think that the more it will become natural maybe to kind of just become parents, whether it's through adoption or fostering or however else, it might just become more of a natural process.
Yeah,
I would hope.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, there's that. You kind of need to hit a critical mass, because you can't. I mean, there's the. It's something of a stonewall line, isn't it? You can't be what you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as there's more visible kind of same-sex families out there, it becomes a more normalised kind of option for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, leads me on to parenting models. Because I've always had this kind of not an issue, bless you. It's not an issue. It's just more of a kind of the perception of the male and female role model within the family home.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to put it more down to one's a nurturer and what have you. What do you follow a traditional parenting model, or have you kind of just what each other what's your setup like?
My partner took the lion's share of the adoption leave and took the and has gone part time, so he's kind of filling that kind of primary carer role.
Yeah.
Which I guess is traditionally associated with motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of how we kind of interact with our children, I wouldn't say we're deliberately replicating traditional kind of motherhood and fatherhood kind of roles. It's something that we feel the responsibility, we've got to meet all of our children's needs,
mm-hmm.
as far as we can all of the time, and that's what we try and do.
So we
both nurture them, we just pitch in and try and do it.
Yeah. Do you find your parent very much the same, or have you kind of? I'm just thinking about my me and my partner, you know, so we're quite different in a lot of ways, and it suits us, but you know, other people might be very similar in the way they parent. I don't know.
We've tried for we stressed amongst ourselves the need to try and be consistent with our children very early on, and I think that's acted as a. There are now certain things that we do the same with them, and but we're not. That's no longer, I think, that's no longer at the forefront of our mind in the same way that it was during the kind of the transitions period, and it's we tend to bench, you know, we'll tend to only kind of talk through things after the fact rather than kind of strategically pre-planning how we're going to do anything anymore. Which is nice, because that was a hell of a load to keep on top of early on. So I think, I mean, there definitely are emerging differences over time. But it's not something we're worried about at this stage. I think it's the important thing is that you know where it's important that we're consistent. We try to be, and otherwise, you know, variety is the spice of life and all that.
That is very true. So my last question, you'll be pleased to know, so you can get back to your Saturday night entertainment, viewing, whatever it is that you've been up to. So we're heading towards Mother's Day. And I always find this quite interesting, because, you know, do you mark the occasion for your children? I mean, not for your
We just get reminded of the occasion by nursery.
Yes,
we get reminded of the occasion by nursery, to be honest. Yes. And there's always this kind of preemptive kind of conversations going, well, the kids are going to do this, and we'd really, you know, is it okay if your boy also makes you one as well? Of course it is. Mm-hmm. We want him to feel involved and do these things because we're trying to meet that need for him. That's something we're quite happy to do. I suspect over time we'll celebrate it less in the way that, you know, you just do over time, I guess. But right now it's something that we're, you know, because the little environment that they're in is celebrating it. Because it's a slightly more heteronormative environment, we're very happy for our children to kind of participate in that in the context of our family. We're not wearing placards for it yet. it's not the most important. To be honest, it really isn't the most important kind of calendar event to us. For us as a couple.
It's
not to say that others don't feel differently about it.
We're
looking forward to a slightly sticky card coming home from nursery.
Yes. I remember those. And it's an interesting one, because I find at school struggled a little bit with that early days with us. And we got a card that had Happy Mother's Day, and it was written to Mummy, and it was given to me, which, you know, it was fine in some ways, and we didn't make a big issue of it, but it was more about the fact that, you know, our son, who had a full-time learning support assistant with him, because back then it was a statement, it's now an EHCP, and she'd actually helped him with it, and she knew his background, and that was more of an issue for us than it was about actually getting the card. I mean, I was fine, you know, I was fine with the card. I really, you know, it was nice that he'd actually used his artistic skills to do it, but it was more about the kind of other people that knew and didn't really know how to approach it with him. I think he was 9 at that point. So I guess when they're that little bit smaller, it's easier to deal with in some ways, because, like you say, you know, you're just kind of allowing them to express themselves.
Yeah. And the nursery has always been quite, they've been proactive in all instances, and they've said, look, this is coming up, you know, do you want them to do this? And if so, how do we do it? Yeah, just get him to make a card and give it to us.
Yeah, it's a card. At the end of the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting.
It's not happened so much since. It's not happened so much at school. Mm-hmm. But we've not had any kind of. We certainly not had the scenario that you described.
We've had
others. So typically to do with kind of paperwork having a very heteronormative kind of bias to it. That's a learning curve for both sides, isn't it? Where paperwork is historical.
Definitely. Well, listen, Calvin, thank you so much for talking to me tonight. I've really appreciated it, and it's been great talking to you and finding out some of the things that I've kind of always wanted to ask others that maybe not got around to. Thank you, and have a good LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week.
Thank you. You too.
Right, take care. So, welcome, Ruth. Thanks for joining me. Can you introduce yourself to the podcast listeners?
Yes, my name's Ruth, and I'm an adoptive mother of three girls. Me and my partner adopted them. Yeah, we adopted first. They all came. They're a sibling group.
Yeah.
They all came separately, though. So our first daughter arrived in 2012, followed a few months later by her next sibling in April 2013. And then just a few months after, in the September, their baby sister joined us as well.
Blimey.
So we, within 289 days, we'd gone from none to three.
Wow. That's massive. That must be a massive change on your life to go from zero to three in that time and have littlies as well.
Yeah. When we brought our youngest home from hospital because she was on a foster for adopt placement.
Okay.
We literally had a two-year-old, a 30-month-old and a 15-day-old.
I can't even begin to imagine what that's like.
I don't think we realised at the time. I think everything just seemed okay and we got on with it. I think it's only now that we reflect back on that year and think, wow, actually we did that. That was quite an achievement for anybody's standards.
Yeah. And how old are they now, sorry?
So now they are 5, 4 and 3.
Okay, yeah. Wow. It's amazing, isn't it? So you began the process when did you begin the process? What brought you into becoming parents?
We first approached the adoption agency that we were approved with in, I think it was the March 2009, I want to say. It could have been 2010. Before that, we'd gone to some local authorities and sort of shopped around a little bit and had quite a negative experience with one local authority, which is what led us into approaching a voluntary agency.
Mm.
So we did that, but even with them, it took just over 2 years for us to be approved. So I think we went in the March 2010, we weren't approved till the April 2012.
Mm. So it took quite a long time.
There was short staffing was an issue.
Mm.
But we did find that our sexual orientation came against us when it came to them selecting who they were going to put forward in terms of the staffing that they got at the time.
Okay.
There were very clear consensus about the couples that were going through and the one same-sex couple, which was us, and the one single adopter we didn't get through at that point and we had to wait. And it was a clear case of we're going to suspend you because we think that they're going to get matched quicker and the process will be easier for them.
Right.
So we took that on board and we had to wait. And then we waited and waited.
You did. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I mean, we obviously adopted our older two 10 years ago. Mm. And I thought that perhaps there was value seen. It probably sounds wrong to say value, but I thought there was value seen in kind of same-sex or single adoptions these days. So that's, even for just 4 or 5 years ago, that's still quite wrong.
Yeah, I think it's come a long way from then. So I mean, we're talking like between 2010 and 2012 and I didn't expect it to be like that, but given the experience we'd had previously with the local authority it didn't surprise us massively. I think there have been some very clear changes from that time to, you know, now we're in 2017. I was talking to a social worker from a local authority the other day who was telling me their entire prep group for this next session are all same-sex couples. There are no heterosexual couples on there at all. So I think that's quite massive, really, for,
it's huge, for a
local authority to have that. Yeah. And I'd like to think that they've not just grouped all the same-sex couples into one charity course.
Yeah, let's hope not.
But on the face of it, it looks very positive.
Yeah. And that must be a change for the local authorities as well, to be in that position where, you know, the majority of them coming forward are you know, LGBT adopters, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's very positive.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Wow. Cool. Anyway, that shocked me. Thanks for that. So, and in terms of when you, you know, obviously you started out going through the process and what have you, you know, I mean, I'm asking you questions that I probably can relate to in some way in terms of answers. But, you know, you were, when you told your friends and family, what was their reaction to you wanting to become parents? Were they surprised or?
No, I think people expected it. From us, people were just kind of waiting for us to get our act together and actually tell them this is happening. We didn't have a negative, any negative feedback from anybody, actually. Everyone was very supportive at the time and quite happy for us. And, you know, you had your key people that very closely wanted to follow your progress throughout the whole approval stages.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had people volunteering and they were part of our references and stuff. So people were very much involved.
Yeah.
And then obviously when it came for being approved and then in our family finding stage, you know, people really wanted to be part of that and got quite excited and that, yeah, they sort of shared that journey with us.
Mm.
So it's quite good. We didn't really have anything negative. My best friend is very, very straight talking. She was a bit concerned at one point in saying that, hey, do you know, you will love this child, like, this in the same way that you would have loved a child if you had a birth child. You know, you're never going to meet that optimum bond with the child.
Yeah.
And I very much remember very clearly saying to her, for a start, I will never know. I will never have a birth child to compare that to.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we achieve with our adopted child, whoever that might be,
yeah,
will be the best for us. And that's very much how we see it now.
Yeah. And was adoption your first choice?
No, it wasn't. We first agreed and decided that, you know, for our first and foremost choice, which was mostly driven by me rather than my better half, it was that we'd try to conceive and that I would have a birth child. So we pursued that for a couple of years before, you know, coming to the decision about adoption, which I think surprises a lot of people because I think most people assume that because you're gay that you will just naturally adopt and not consider having your own birth child first.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that was very much, it took me a while to kind of work that through and decide that actually that was the way for us.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think absolutely that was the right thing for us to do.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine not having our three now. So absolutely no regrets.
Yeah. It's funny because, I mean, it's not, you're right, isn't it? You know, people do assume that adoption is the first choice for anybody who's LGBT, but and I guess for us it was our first choice personally, but it's interesting because I wonder about the process, you know, if you were a heterosexual couple or a straight couple, whatever, you know, whatever kind of name you're going to call our peers who just so happen to be male and female, but I do wonder if I have always wondered, is it the same kind of situation where you have to, you know, go through that within the assessment process? Do you have to talk about, you know, your feelings of loss because you've tried for a birth child or you were going to, how did that work?
Originally when we first applied to the local authority that we had the not so good experience with, they messed us around for quite a while, but actually the first time we approached them was they said no, because they considered a failure to conceive the same as a miscarriage, which at the time I was like quite confused and upset about because I very much didn't feel that had happened to us.
Mm.
But like I say, I think everything happened for a reason. So we had that time when we went back after the, I think it's 12 months or something they want you to have from either your last miscarriage or your last IVF attempt or your last attempt to conceive. So we waited that time and went back. But then actually, because of everything that happened with them, by the time we actually got to being approved. Quite, you know, a good almost 4 years had elapsed from that point for us. So, but yeah, I think they do cover it, and you are expected to talk about it. I'm not convinced, and I think this is kind of the same with friends and stuff. I don't think people, because people assume that you will just adopt because you are gay, I don't think they take it as seriously or consider your feelings when it comes to actually talking about you not having your own birth child. And I don't think people take that quite the same because they just assume. Or they assume, we have so many like single straight female friends say to us, oh, I'll carry a baby for you, I can do that. I used to be like, yeah, we have two wombs between us, we're not sure our wombs.
No, you're not, no. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that perception. It's really interesting, that is. Do you think that's more about, and you know, you don't have to answer this if you don't mind, but do you think that's more about sexuality than anything else? This assumption that gay women wouldn't want to carry a baby, or do you think that's just...
I think so. That's very much on a personal level, how that's felt, having experienced that with other people, that it's just that assumption that you would do that. And people who know us now who didn't know us previously, if it ever comes out in conversation or whatever, that, you know, we were there once, it's almost like disbelief. They just, it hasn't registered for them. Where I think if they were talking to a heterosexual couple, I think it's the opposite. I think people actually assume that they must have failed in fertility, or they've had failed IVF, or they've had lots of miscarriages, or for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I think it's very different. I think if you're gay, you're expected to want to adopt straight away. Mm. If you're straight, it's almost perceived that that would be the second choice for a lot of people, which it's not either. You know, there are lots of couples who come to that decision, and adoption's the first thing for them.
Yeah,
but it's quite interesting. I think it's quite an interesting area.
Yeah. So just going on to your children then, and you know, I'm just interested. I mean, they're still very young, obviously, but do you think that they see any difference between your family and others?
No, we have lots of same-sex family friends and stuff, so they've grown up knowing that, you know, such a child has got two daddies, or such a child's got two mummies, the same. They've got no issue. They're very vocal and forward talking. I can't think where they get that from. my eldest has quite a habit for introducing us as mummy and mom to like any stranger that she sees. So you can just be at the checkout and she will tell the lady, this is my mummy and this is my mom and these are my sisters. Like, yeah, she'll just out you at every opportunity. so there's no, I don't think it bothers them. It has surprised me that naturally, bearing in mind that they are all home educated at this point, they naturally, when they're playing, will play mummies and daddies.
Right, okay.
And I've never quite got that. And other than the only thing I can think that they've got that from is from, you know, TV and cartoon influences. But yeah, their first, that even though we've had them so young, their first thought is mummy and daddy. We'll play mummies and daddies. Which of course is, you know, is fine by us. We don't like say, no, you can't do that.
No, of course. No.
If you ask them, well, why is it not a mummy and a mum?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no reason, it's just mummy and dad. But then if they see two women out together and it can quite clearly just be a couple of friends having a meal, they'll shout very loudly, are they two mummies? Even if they've got no children around them. So they definitely don't think it's, you know, out of the ordinary or anything like that. They're quite, they're well into it. We had a civil partnership for 10 years, and on our 10th anniversary last year, we converted to same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
So we didn't have a ceremony, but just the five of us went to the registry office. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of magazines out on the table, and my eldest actually picked out a magazine that was specifically for same-sex weddings, just completely unprompted, picked it up, sat down, opened it up, started looking at the pictures. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Mummy, this is lovely, look, two daddies getting married just like you, and two mummies getting married just like you are today. And this is, it was all completely... I hate the word normal, but, you know, it's very typical for her, and that's part of their life.
Oh, wow. That's really good.
How they feel about that when they're older is obviously something else to consider, but at this point, they're pretty settled.
I mean, I guess, having had them so young and them kind of grown up with it, I guess there's going to be an element of confidence about them, isn't there?
Yeah.
When it comes to talking. But do you worry about, you know, if they, I mean, I'm not sure what your plans are in terms of kind of longer term education and stuff, but do you worry about them kind of being kind of opened up to other children who may not be quite as well kind of prepared for different kinds of relationships and stuff? Or is that something that you feel that you might have to do? Or
I think before we had children, that was definitely a consideration for us about how much was this child that we might adopt one day going to stand out one for being adopted if they had any additional needs, and then having, like, you know, same-sex parents.
Yeah.
But actually what we've started to develop more leading up to having our first daughter, but then continue to build on that, is it's they could stand out for a million and one reasons. Mm. And for us, it's about them having the confidence and the respect in other people, that they respect that everybody is different.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing an all right job with that at the moment. They're pretty good with, you know, they don't bat an eyelid at any difference in somebody.
Yeah.
And if they do spot something, they're very much quick to correct it and say, well, actually, it's okay that, you know, that person looks that way or whatever, because everybody's different and it's okay.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that we can do enough by the time they get to the point where they might be exposed to that they're actually just really confident in themselves as individuals, but also, you know, the unit that they belong to, as well as their life story work, and that they take some ownership of that and feel confident enough to challenge that if they need to.
Yeah. I'm still kind of struck by the mummy and daddy thing. I think that's quite an amazing thing, but, you know, they've kind of
I'm really not sure where that's. I can only think, you know, Peppa Pig's been very prevalent in this age, and, you know, it's all Mummy Pig and Daddy Pig and all that jazz. There obviously aren't any cartoons that, you know, depict a family that reflects us. They go with that. But it has surprised me that they think that that's their first call to go to,
even though
they know lots of other same-sex families.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's not funny, but, you know, I mean, it's amusing.
Definitely.
So, kind of leads me on to back to the LGBT community, really, because, you know, we've both been in that community in some way, shape, or form. What's the reaction been to kind of perhaps new contacts in the LGBT community to you having adopted and being parents? What's been the perception of you and your partner and the kids?
This is probably saying quite ironic, really, but I think actually having the children brought us back to the LGBTQ community.
Okay.
I think when we were younger, we were very much part of that. You know, we had lots of gay friends. We were very much on the scene and part of that. But then as we got older as a couple, we kind of just naturally withdrew for no particular reason. Having the children and in the part of our adoption process, we discovered like NFS and that really opened the door up for us.
Yeah.
So by making links and contacts on there, we then again opened up a realm of community. And that was important for us, that the children, we would meet families through that and go to their like meet-up events and stuff, so the children would at least see that it's not just them who have same-sex parents. There are lots of children in that position.
Yeah.
And we've met, you know, one of my closest friends now was somebody that we met on NFS, and we're very much part of each other's family lives and stuff. And, you know, the children really look up to them as a couple. And so it's been really beneficial. That brought us back. Adoption actually brought us back into the community, which is, I don't think I would have expected to have happened.
Yeah,
Prior to that, though, I lost my best friend, who was a gay male, purely down to the fact, and we were best friends for like from school, so, you know, a good 12 years, and that all came down to the fact he could not get his head around the fact that I wanted children, and he was very much still into partying, and he thought it was wrong. He didn't think that gay people should have children. He had a very different perception of that. And in the end, we did, based on that, we agreed to mutually part ways, which was a huge loss for me at the time, because actually the one person I really wanted to be there for me throughout my adoption process and journey into motherhood was obviously my best friend.
Yeah.
But he couldn't get his head around that. And so I'd imagine there are lots of people who also feel that way.
Yeah.
But that's the same as there are lots of straight people who don't want children. It's not a reason not to do it, is it?
Yeah, that's right. But then, you know, I wouldn't say I've lost anybody through my kind of choice of becoming a parent, but I think there is almost a little bit of a kind of, oh, that's a bit weird. Why would you want to have children?
Mm.
Yeah. And I'm not sure it kind of, you know, because when I kind of share my story sometimes, I refer back to when I was about 14, 15, and I remember it so vividly that I was sat in the back of the school bus. I'd been to the orthodontist to have my braces tightened or something like that. And I was sitting on the back of the school bus, and I was on my own, and I was just thinking about, you know, things that go on in life. And I just remember it coming into my head that I would never have children. And it wasn't that I was saying to myself I was gay or I was bisexual or, you know, whatever else. It was just I was thinking to myself, I will never have children. And that followed me through until my mid-20s, until
yeah.
it kind of started becoming possible. So I don't know if it was kind of the fact that the law said we couldn't have we couldn't have children in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously laws have changed since then in terms of adoption and fostering and stuff like that. But I guess it's there must be, like you've experienced, there must be others out there that have had that similar experience where actually they're very against having children.
Yeah. And I think I don't know, maybe that's just I think perhaps some straight people just don't see why or understand why somebody would want to have children through whatever means. There are just people who naturally like that, but certainly in my experience with that friend, it was his views were very much that gay people should not have children,
yeah.
which really surprised me about him. But yeah, he was very clear, and I think that was a lot about his own lifestyle. But it just didn't work. But that's really the only person.
Yeah.
So ironic that that's, you know, your closest person to you is the one who has that view. But that's really been the only person who has ever said anything like that to us.
Yeah. And I've experienced this. Do you come across people who actually still don't realise that they can adopt or foster from the community?
No, I haven't personally, because everybody that I've met from the community has been either already an adopter or is going through the process,
yeah.
or they've been people that I've met when I've been delivering prep training courses or open events and stuff. So generally all of those people you would hope at that stage know that they're going ahead and going through with it. But yeah, I would imagine there are still pockets of the community that have no idea that that's an open avenue for them. But I'd like to think that's breaking down a bit from when we were young, all that time ago.
Well, that's interesting, because I did. I went through work to a kind of a fundraising stroke, raising awareness. We had a table at Brighton Pride year before last. And it was really interesting because, you know, we live in our own little bubbles, whether it's as parents or, you know, through work or whatever. And I had no idea, especially in Brighton, the number of people who didn't actually realise that they could be a foster carer or an adoptive parent. It was absolutely huge, the numbers. I mean, we talked to maybe 200-300 people that day, maybe even a bit more than that. I'm not sure. In fact, little man Jay was the star of the show, because he spoke to everybody who came up and said, "Have you thought about being a parent?" And he was like pulling them over to the table.
That's right.
He was only 8 at the time, so he had a lot of confidence about stuff like that. But it was hugely interesting. There was, you know, someone came over and said, "Oh, you know, no, I can't adopt because I don't have a partner." And it's like, you don't need a partner. You can adopt as a single person. And then he said something that I think he said, "Oh, I don't own my own home." So it was all those kind of traditional myths that, you know, we hear about day in, day out, and it's still there. And there was more than just that one person. So I still find it quite interesting that, you know, that kind of awareness that we have, and within our little communities that we kind of live in, that is, you know, we know about it, but actually what further afield, some people still don't know that it's a possibility. There's still a lot of myth busting to be done.
Yeah, that really surprises me. But I think it's kind of like with anything. I think if you're interested in it, you've got to take some ownership of trying to research that a little bit, haven't you? I guess it's quite concerning that there are that many people who are completely in the dark about it. But maybe that's more about they're just not at a part of a time in their lives when it's something that's a serious consideration for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it depends on you as well. And I think adoption is very much like that. It depends on how you are as a person, to how much ownership you're going to take of that process and that journey for you. I think that makes a massive difference in adoption, regardless of your sexuality.
Good point, Ruth. Good point. I like that. So, a question I wanted to ask, because I'm always conscious of it, is the kind of traditional parenting models. So, you know, obviously in a heterosexual straight relationship, you have a mum, you have a dad, you have, you know, all, kind of everything that goes with that. Traditionally, I'm talking about, I'm not saying that, you know, that every mum stays at home and, you know, cooks and cleans and does all that. But, but do you and your partner kind of slip into any kind of traditional parenting kind of roles, like the nurturer, the disciplinarian, you know, the cleaner of the house?
I think we do, but that is more about us as individuals and our personalities and the strengths that we bring to our partnership.
Yeah.
So I think I don't think that is about our gender in that respect. Yeah. I do believe that's more that I've always been the one that's gone out to work, and that was always the plan, and I've been the one that's very career focused and driven. That said, and Sam, you know, my partner will stay at home and looks after the children full time.
Right.
I think it's more about, see, our children call her mum. Mm-hmm. And so they have a mummy and a mum for sure. And we have a bit of a standing joke in our house that something will happen and I will say, well, that's because I'm a mummy and you're a mum. And that will be stuff around, like, I am naturally more maternal than my partner is.
Yeah.
Yet my partner's the one that stays at home full time. Mm-hmm. If they are poorly or sick or they really need some swaddling up and cuddling and all of that traditional mummy stuff, they will come to me for that.
Yeah.
They will access my partner for that, obviously, in my absence, but as a first choice thing, that, you know, they will come and seek me out for that. But then I would also say I'm probably more of the disciplined one as well. Naturally, my partner's just naturally more laid back than I am. So it's kind of like, it's not like we've really tried to go into this equally, and we were very clear at the beginning. I think we're very fortunate that, you know, we do make a good team and we share the same parenting values and outlook as each other, so that makes it so much easier. I could not imagine doing this journey with somebody who had a completely opposite approach to me, because I just think that'd be utter chaos and very difficult. So I think that's half the game won. People will ask, it's much like when you get together, who's the husband, who's the wife, or which one's mummy, which one's daddy. People ask questions in ignorance about things like that, but I don't think we have specific gender roles. I think we both just do what's best. My partner does most of the cleaning and the house care because she's at home full time and I'm not.
Yeah.
So that kind of falls into her category to do, and I get to come home and run around like an idiot with the kids for an hour before they go to bed. That's kind of just the way it is. So I suppose traditionally some people would say that was more the man's role or the father's role, but actually in terms of maternal stuff and all of that fluffy stuff that comes with motherhood, that's also my role as well. So I think it's more about our personalities and that matches us as people rather than it being a gender specific thing.
It's really interesting. I mean, I'm always interested by that because, you know, with the older two boys, I took 7.5 years off work, and I'm more of the nurturing parent. So it kind of fell at that because my career wasn't really where I wanted it to be at that time and stuff like that. I mean, I'm one of these people that loves to work, but at that time it just seemed like the right thing to do. And we've actually swapped roles in that respect because obviously I now go out to work and my partner stays at home. And I'm the nurturer for the 10-year-old. But it just, it works for them. It's a bit more of a struggle with the teens, shall we say, because they're teens, for a start. Secondly, they were used to like 7-8 years of me being at home. And that's changed, so that's really kind of knocked them off kilter in terms of, you know, having that kind of nurturing parent at home to having now the disciplinarian at home almost. And like you, I don't think it's gender specific. I think it's just more about personality as well. But I think that a lot of people think that, you know, there is a kind of a female role and a male role. And I don't think that's necessarily the case in a lot of...
No, I don't. And I think in a work environment, if it ever, because it doesn't really come into conversation, but if it ever comes into conversation for whatever reason, that, you know, I have children and I'm gay and my partner's at home full time. I think people change their view very quickly of me in that moment because they almost then assume that, you know, my partner must be the one that wears a pinny and runs around all day and must, you know, must be like Mother Nature and just you know, wearing a sling and doing all of that jazz. Yeah. And actually, that's so far from the truth. But I think people, but again, I don't think that's a sexuality thing. I think people have that perception of women who go to work full time and think that they're not necessarily the same traditional mother that they would be if they were at home.
Yeah.
Just kind of trying to get the balance. That's right, I think.
Yeah, it is. Oh, well, we're busting a lot of myths tonight, I have to say. So, Father's Day and Mother's Day, I always, I struggle a little bit with this in our house because of the kind of gender-specific celebration that it is. Mm. And also, I mean, add to the fact, you know, that the boys, well, my children have another mum and dad, as do yours, obviously. How do you kind of what's your approach to Mother's Day and Father's Day? How do you approach it?
Father's Day, we don't do anything. They will be part. They will, you know, get a card for my dad and give like a grandfather's card, and they're aware that, you know, I will give my dad a card for Father's Day. Yeah. But we don't celebrate that between us because things with our children need to be very structured and black and white. It would be very confusing for me to explain to my five-year-old why I'm now asking her to write a Father's Day card when in her head everything is very very rigid. But Mother's Day, I think they're still a bit young to really understand what the whole process and what the point of that is. So we'll just go off and do something as a family, and I'll get, you know, a little token thing for my other half from them, and she'll do the same. But they don't really get it at this point. We kind of just say, you know, Mother's Day is just a nice day to celebrate being, you know, mummies to you and having that, and it's our chance to really recognize it. That kind of goes over the head. They just want to open whatever the present is. It doesn't matter what it is. They're not massively bothered at this age. But I think we'll just continue with that as a momentum that, you know, Mother's Day is just a celebration for us to celebrate you know, having you as made us mothers, and that's, you know, like the best thing ever. So we'll just do that with a, you know, meal out and a few token gifts, but otherwise it's not a huge and certainly hasn't been a huge event for us. And Father's Day we just don't mark.
It's really hard, isn't it? I mean, I think that when I obviously my children were older, so they knew more about their birth kind of background because they'd lived with them for a number of years and stuff, so I think it's a different sort of situation, isn't it? But you know, Mother's Day I always kind of approach with a little bit of caution because we obviously don't celebrate it because we're two dads. But you know, we do flowers from my parents, similar to you, but the opposite way around. I it's kind of, I guess it's how much of a memory they've got of that as to whether we would consider sort of focusing on that, I guess. So it's an interesting one. Well, Ruth, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for spending this half hour with me.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
And I think that we've definitely covered some stuff that I would be interested here in from other people. So thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Cheers. See you later.